It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and it's time for our weekly look at government and politics. Amanda Vinicky of Chicago Tonight on WTTW Chicago will be joining us in a few minutes to talk about what went down in the second week of the veto session for Illinois state legislators, likely the last action we'll see from them this year. But first, joining us, as usual, to talk about what's been happening in Washington is Linda Kenyon, who covers D.C. and our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. Linda, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Brian. Glad to be back.
Listeners, as I mentioned earlier, our entire program is on tape today, but you can let us know what you think about what we've been talking about, no matter how early or late in the day it is, by calling our voicemail line. 217-300-2121 is the number. 217-300-2121. All right, Linda, not that it was really that noticeable here in Illinois, but Tuesday was an election day in several states, and indications are that it was not a good night for Republicans, especially in the Midwest, right? We saw Andy Beshear, a Democrat, won another term as governor of Kentucky, and in Ohio, voters approved measures to legalize marijuana and protect abortion rights. What went wrong for Republicans?
Well, that's going to be a subject of political science classes for quite some time to come. But I think what the Democrats are taking from this is that abortion is still and probably ever will be a major issue that is a winner right now for Democrats and a loser for Republicans. That as the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and sent the issue of abortion back to the states, individual states have been deciding for themselves how they want to approach the abortion issue. And the states seem to say that it's certainly in Ohio, for example, that abortion should be legal, should be part of the state constitution, and restrictions on abortion include 6-week bans, 15-week bans, what have you, a lot of the stricter ones that don't have, for example, exceptions for the life or health of the mother, that those are not winners for Republicans at the polls, and that the Democratic approach seems to be resonating now more than ever.
And yet we have seen polls in the last few days that have shown President Biden trailing the Republican frontrunner, former President Donald Trump, in terms of next year's presidential election. Now, we are almost a full year away from that, fair enough, and a lot can happen still. But what are some of those political forces that are keeping former President Trump and the, you know, the sort of MAGA, Make America Great Again wing of the Republican Party? What's keeping them going and alive right now?
I would say that one of the things that is hurting Joe Biden the most right now is the focus on his age. He's not that much older, by the way, than Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is still the perceived frontrunner for the GOP presidential nomination. In fact, actually today, President Biden is in Illinois. And he was speaking in Belvidere, Illinois, about the reopening of an auto plant. And
just for our listeners, this is, we tape this on Thursday afternoon. So he was in Illinois on Thursday. Yes, visiting that auto plant. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yeah.
No, no problem. I get a little sidetracked with what day it is, obviously. But nonetheless, he did speak to union members, and he said, you know, the economy is doing great. He thanked members of the Illinois congressional delegation, including Bill Foster and Eric Sorensen, for being at the event. But he said, you know, the economy's doing much better than any of the other top industrialized nations right now. But the problem for the president is not just his age right now, but it is concern about the economy. And while abortion may be a winning issue for the Democrats right now, the economy is not. Despite how many times the president has said that inflation is down considerably, that unemployment is down considerably, et cetera, when you're going to the grocery store and it still costs you $5 for a dozen eggs, you're not going to think of it that way. And that's what's been hurting the Biden campaign and the Democrats, and what's been helping Republicans.
Yeah, I've heard one pundit describing that as a lecture from Washington is not going to outweigh your lived experience if you perceive the prices higher in the grocery store, no matter what may be happening macroeconomically. I want to turn now to the U.S. House of Representatives, which passed a measure this week to censure Representative Rashida Tlaib of Michigan over remarks she made about the Israel-Hamas war. It's worth noting it wasn't just Republicans voting in favor of this censure. What have you heard from Illinois' Democratic congresspeople about their reasoning on this?
Well, in all, 22 Democrats joined all but four Republicans in voting to formally rebuke Rashida Tlaib. And so that is really not good for Tlaib, but it also shows that in terms of not just the Illinois delegation, but in terms of Congress in general, there is a very strong effort to make sure that Israel knows that the United States of America still stands by Israel. Now, Rashida Tlaib is of Palestinian descent. Her grandmother, by the way, still lives in Gaza. And on a Middle East congressional delegation not too long ago, she was denied the ability to go and visit her own grandmother when she was visiting Israel as part of that congressional trip. And she's been very outspoken against the treatment of the Palestinian people. And while a lot of Americans, and certainly all around the world, a lot of people in general, have been protesting the Israeli bombardment against Hamas, which has killed thousands of Palestinian civilians, there is still, there is still concern that there may not be enough outward support for Israel on the part of the United States Congress. So I think that's what was going on, and the U.S. was trying to make sure that it assuaged any concerns that the U.S. might not be standing by Israel.
Linda, last question, and we are almost out of time, but we are 1 week away from another potential government shutdown. Here we are again having this conversation. Has there been any meaningful progress on that? I saw that the House was voting this week, for example, to reduce the salary of the White House press secretary and the vice president's office. I don't get a lot of sense of hope for forward progress on serious budget negotiations.
I'm going to have to say that there's been no real forward progress on the budget negotiations. That the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, wanted two votes on two separate appropriations bills to hit the floor this week. One was to fund the Treasury Department, and one was to fund housing and transportation. And both of those bills were pulled from the floor because Mr. Johnson realized that he did not have enough votes to pass it. And that was due in part to the fact that there were a lot of riders, a lot of amendments that were going to be attached. For example, to the Treasury Department, there was an abortion-related provision and also an FBI funding provision that was added to the bill. And that would have lost a lot of support from moderate Democrats and from moderate Republicans as well. And so they were pulled. Now, that means that there's more likely going to be another effort next week to pass those bills. But the House is still woefully behind, and as is the Senate, on passing any appropriations whatsoever to avoid a government shutdown on November 17th. So they're going to have to come up with stopgap spending measures. And they have already sort of sketched out what those measures might look like.
Linda Kenyon, I suspect we will have this conversation again next week and soon after that, and maybe even soon after that. Thanks, as always, for joining us here on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, this is, as I said, the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're continuing our political roundtable now with the second and final week of the veto session in the Illinois General Assembly this year. Joining us now to unpack the results of that session is Amanda Vinicky, who covers state government for Chicago Tonight, the news program on PBS station WTTW. Amanda, welcome back to the show. Thanks again for coming on to talk veto session.
Sure thing. It was good to be back in Springfield to cover our legislators, and great to be talking with you, Brian.
So, Amanda, one proposal we did not get a chance to talk about with you after week one of veto session was legislation that would end the state's ban on nuclear power construction. Governor Pritzker had a problem with the version of that legislation that passed earlier this year. He had vetoed it. because of what he said was a lack of health and safety provisions. Now there is a new nuclear bill that cleared both chambers of the legislature with pretty substantial bipartisan support. What is different with this version of the legislation?
Yeah, Brian, first of all, what is interesting is that bipartisanship. You don't frankly see a whole lot of that. And this was something that was negotiated, and a lot of Republicans praising Democrats and vice versa. So pretty rare. And as you noted, it did clear both chambers and is expected to be signed into law, unlike the previous version that governor vetoed because the administration was in on negotiations. What's different? Part of that gets fairly technical, and I am no nuclear physicist or engineer, so don't want to get too deep into the weeds there, but it resolved some of the questions that the governor had evidently regarding security, kind of giving the Illinois Emergency Management Agency a specified role. Advocates had said, you know, that would have been okay anyway. They believe it was previously built in, but nonetheless sort of assuaged some of the Pritzker administration's concerns. And then also really spelled out the type of nuclear reactors that will be involved. We're not talking any more of these big, huge places. Like I visited one, for example, in Byron, not talking anything like that. Rather, it really specifically defines what would be permitted. And these are these small modular reactors that had been something that actually Illinois' business community, some manufacturers had wanted, because they say renewable just isn't going to work for them. They need some of the steam that would be produced, and they need some, again, this gets far above my pay grade, but they want these sort of things. And these are, but I will note that while this did pass both chambers of the General Assembly, again, bipartisanship, a lot of talk about jobs and reliability concerns being addressed through this, as we have Illinois looking to more renewables in the future of energy. This will resolve reliability concerns, they say. There are still critics who believe that if you have these small, literally modular nuclear reactors, that they presents its own security challenges. If you have, you know, a nuclear power at businesses, for example.
Yeah, well, that is something interesting. We'll continue to watch that. I think that was probably the biggest news that came out of the veto session. You could probably sum up much of the rest of it as not a lot happening. So, for example, we talked a lot a couple weeks ago about this private school scholarship program that's being debated, whether to renew it. It's going to sunset at the end of the year if there's no action. There was a lot of talk about extending it, but it sounds like there's not a compromise that has the votes to pass. What happened there? What prevented people from getting together on that?
Yeah, Brian, sometimes the action is the lack of action, and that is certainly the case for this veto session, and very specifically with Invest in Kids. There was a lot of commotion at the Capitol. I heard a lot of chanting, saw students, families, spoke with them as they were really trying to pressure legislators to continue Invest in Kids, because they say the rug is really going to be pulled out from under students who currently are on scholarship and then might need to change schools because their families can't afford the tuition going forward without that. What happened, I think, is several fold. First of all, it is election season. You can't always forget that. Legislators are asking for petitions to be signed, and they're looking ahead to 2024. And this is something that the powerful teachers unions were really against. From a philosophical point of view, they believe that this is essentially a backdoor to vouchers, and that could lead, of course, to the dismantling, they believe, of the public education system. And that while it wasn't directly taking money from Illinois education and Illinois schools, that it was a roundabout way of doing so, in the sense that these are tax credits given, therefore money not in state coffers at a time when public education needs billions of dollars in order to get to the adequacy level that Illinois law itself calls for. So, again, a lot of commotion. I would say that this is not dead yet. The program, yes. We don't believe that legislators are going to be coming back at all over the holidays. 2023 will end, and with it, Invest in Kids. But I did speak with folks who believe that they can fight to live another day in the spring session. And that while these students are going to have a lot of uncertainty, that their scholarships will carry them through this school year. So they hope to really try and revive this, make it maybe part of budget negotiations or some such, and then get the scholarships continued before the new school year begins.
All right. Well, Amanda, like you said, sometimes the news is what doesn't happen in the General Assembly. I was reminded this week of Rich Miller's line, always bet on nothing. What else is on the back burner right now, at least for this year? What are you keeping an eye on as we gear up for next year's session, I guess?
Well, I am keeping an eye on a couple of things, Brian. So for starters, the elected board for Chicago Public Schools. And while I realize that many of your listeners don't necessarily reside in Chicago and therefore aren't perhaps interested in the intricacies, it is, from a political perspective, quite fascinating because you really have the Chicago Teachers Union closely allied with the mayor of Chicago, who himself was an organizer for CTU and a former teacher, but that has some political dynamics because CTU really coming out strong against the president of the Illinois Senate, Don Harmon, who favors a different approach as Chicago makes this transition. So that's been interesting. Also, I'm going to be continuing what happens with some of the kind of the big ones that have been in the news a lot, and that is marijuana policy and also gun policy. And we are watching all of what is happening in the courts, but there are also some measures that folks want to advance that would further, one could characterize them as gun control. In particular, we're talking about legislation that would give law enforcement a stricter sense of duty and responsibility to remove firearms from individuals under orders of protection from potential domestic violence victims. So those are just a couple that spring to mind, but by golly, with every day I'm seeing new bills introduced and popping up, and you never know what is going to really galvanize the attention of the public.
Amanda Vinicky with WTTW Chicago Tonight. If you're in Chicagoland, you can find it on Channel 11. Everywhere else, it's on your PBS TV app. Amanda, thanks so much. Great to talk with you again.
You too, Brian.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.